is the Bard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council Executive Committee meeting, January 9th. Thank you all for coming on the Executive Committee. Our sole purpose today is really to discuss how we handle the language on indirect costs that created confusion at that. It has been handled by the grant administrator in a certain way. There's been suggestions for other ways. There are nonprofits that want to handle it in a certain way. And it was my feeling when we were having a discussion about this at our last meeting, the meeting before our last meeting, that we really ought to just decide how we want to handle this once and for all and put it behind us so that we don't have this continual debate. In my mind, you know, there are things that are indirect that make sense for us to probably cover and things that don't. But I bet if we took a poll right now, everyone would have a different sense of what those are and the level to which we should be including them in our recommendations. And so this is really just an opportunity to have a discussion. I know Heather and Bill have done a lot of work. There's a lot of background information for you in your packet, and the links were sent out in advance. I'm going to ask them to give their opinions, which aren't completely in alignment, which is actually helpful. They have a little different take on it. And talk about what we've done in the past and what to go forward. We do have a recommended strategy because it felt like to just sort of have this meeting with a discussion and not have something that we're at least going to recommend to start with would be a mistake. The group may choose to completely trash it, to go forward without a recommendation, to make it something else. Anything is okay. So I think I'll just turn it over to Bill and Heather to give their perspective on this and then to get into a general discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be brief. We have worked on trying to ensure that recipients of appropriations from the Outdoor Heritage Fund are carrying out programs or doing projects are fully compensated for all the costs they incur, that they can show, demonstrate, are direct to and necessary for the work they've been asked to do. We think that the law as it's written, with the direct and necessary language, is in spirit with what the Constitution says, that each expenditure must protect, enhance, or restore. And so our view is that the best thing for the council to do is to make it absolutely clear that we will reimburse, or our ENR as our contract manager will reimburse, anything the recipient can demonstrate is direct and necessary using any rational method. Last but not least, this is not an unusual approach. It's documented at the federal government level. It's found in the appropriate OMB circulars that there's a direct allocation method to ensure that all costs that can be identified are reimbursed. But then I want to turn it over to Heather, and she'll take you through what our current approach is so that it's clear what we're talking about.
I took a look at all of the documents that have been shared with the council over the last several years and testimony that we've heard from the Department of Natural Resources, from the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and others around direct support services. And I tried to summarize as best I could in two pages what we have before us. It's pretty clear to us from reviewing these documents and laws that the direct and necessary measure is one that is well suited for our purposes. certainly the council was a bit out front on this, and in the view of the auditor, at least, was a standard that he wished to apply to other legacy funds, which was adopted by the legislature in 2011. We looked at the Minnesota Department of Management and Budget's guidelines to state agencies around direct and necessary expenses, and it was clear again that being able to demonstrate that in terms of the efficient use of the dollars and the concept was reasonable, and again, supported state law, which requires all funds to support themselves in terms of their administrative costs. Finally, I reviewed the DNR methodologies that have been presented to the council on three different occasions, the way in which they had developed their methodology in determining how to approach direct support services. The methodology seemed to be sound. Council heard that, as I said on several occasions, and did not choose to act, but through the process of approving accomplishment plans, I guess by fiat did approve that methodology. Finally, I wanted to say as well and point out that the work of a interagency group with the Department of Natural Resources Contract Management has been working through methodologies around direct support services, and to date had work with two entities, Dr. Mood and the Nature Conservancy, to come to a rationale that was supported and would meet the measure of direct and necessary for reimbursement of costs. So with that, I will stand for any questions.
I have a couple questions, Heather. And I'm just going to put this out there right now. There's been so many different terms used for the expenses we're talking about. I see administrative costs at the top of this document we're talking about now, direct and necessary. I mean, I'm just going to use the term indirect expenses. And just by its definition that I'm using, indirect expenses are expenses that can't necessarily be shown that are specifically being used for an individual project. They're costs incurred by different entities over a wide range of their whole, all the work they do in a fiscal year that can't be specifically shown for an individual project. So I guess my question is, I think that's the issue we're here to try and deal with today. And if we use the process that I think you just described, we'd be unable to do that. And the other thing is that the same expenses I'm talking about here are expenses that have been woven into direct and necessary expenses for Ducks Unlimited, I understand, for TNC, and for the Department of Natural Resources. So to me, there seems to be kind of a double standard here. And that's the issue we're dealing with here today. But if we're going to start with the premise that you just laid out, there are only going to be compensated if they can be shown to be direct and necessary. We're never really going to be able to address the issue.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Cox, I think the issue really is, let's take a step back, is whether these are any expense that is has to be reimbursed needs to be direct to and necessary. So that's really the first level of analysis. So if you think about the budget in terms of every line item, each one of those line items, without whatever dollar amount is allocated, needs to be direct and necessary to the purposes of that appropriation. So in that sense, the direct support services is really no different. It's just a different way in which to calculate those expenses. So it's not that an indirect, as you termed it, an indirect expense is not direct to a necessary for appropriation. It's just the methodology in which it is enumerated. So the idea being that for certain costs associated with a project, they would be either so small or infinitesimal or difficult to calculate that the most efficient way in which to capture those expenses is to develop some sort of methodology that describes those. So it doesn't really matter at the end of the day how it's done, as long as that expense is direct to and necessary for the appropriation.
Might I add, Mr. Chair, that the paper that you have on page 2 on our current methodology has principles that are guiding the allowable costs, and they're all important, but what's most important is that they're rationally allocated, that these things that are normally referred to as indirect costs are reviewed and rationally allocated to the project. They sort of move from that nether world of indirect to a direct world through the rational allocation method. This is an acceptable accounting procedure documented by the United States Office of Management and Budget in Circular A-122, also Circular A-88, I believe, and used by federal agencies to solve this problem.
Yeah. So this rational method that you're talking about, Bill, has that been applied across everybody equally? I mean, is that the process that everyone's using?
That is the process everyone is using.
When you say everyone's using,
Is DU's process the same as the Nature Conservancy's process? Is the same as the Department of Natural Resources' process?
I don't know that for a fact.
We, as a council, look at the department's process and have brought them here before you, and they have described how they come to their support services or direct administrative costs. Another way to put it. They, in turn, look at Ducks Unlimited, the Nature Conservancy, and others. We have people in the audience who are familiar with those processes, and if you'd like, we can bring them up and they can tell us what they do.
Yeah. Well, I think what we're trying to do here today, Bill, if I understand it correctly, is we're trying to come up with a standardized process for everyone, a process that the council makes a recommendation so that everybody is following the same process. Not that everybody works out their own process individually with the Department of Natural Resources.
I think the NGOs that have been getting money that we've recommended have, as a large part, not chosen to go after the indirect in the way that the Nature Conservancy and Ducks Unlimited have. And so the real question is, from fairness, if my assumption is right, how do we make sure everyone knows what the playing field is and what the rules are so everyone's doing it the same way?
I think it would be appropriate to have Amanda and maybe Dave from DNR come up and give us a brief discussion of their approach in implementing our appropriations through the contract management appropriation.
While you guys are coming up, right?
My question is kind of following up on Jim's in terms of the chronology. We're into the fifth year of appropriations now. So we have precedents set for 5 years in terms of what's happened. And we have the authority here of making the recommendation to the legislature regarding appropriations. So we've had has laid out here some direction to the legislative auditor and action taken starting in 11 about direct and necessary, and we've been following the statutory guidance. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So, the point of, we don't have any, what's the problem, I guess? Where are we at with, I mean, are some of these folks wanting us to change the procedure? Is there a problem with the procedure? If we're following the statute, is there something from the DNR where they're asking for a change of procedure? I guess that's what I would like to hear.
I have had no request from a recipient, or from the department to change the procedure. They may have a different request here today.
You guys are doing the grant administration. We'd love to hear your perspective on this as to what's transpired in the past and what problems that may have led to, and just your general sense of clarity about this, because I think a lot of this is unclear. It certainly has been to me.
Can I just ask one?
Sure.
My initial question would be, is the process that we approved for the Department of Natural Resources last year, is that the same process you're using for other grantees?
My name is Amanda Graber. I'm the grants manager at the DNR. I work with the Contract Administration Program. And the concept is the same, but the procedure is different for each group. So the consistency you're talking about is not necessarily there at this point. So what Bill and Heather described as far as the concept and what groups are aiming at as far as recouping costs that are direct and necessary for that project through a formula, that's the same for DU, for TMC, for DNR. But the types of costs that they're looking at and maybe the percentage that they're looking at, that's different. So I can let Dave talk about the DNR-specific projects, but as far as pass-through, TNC is looking at the particular project that they're doing. They're looking at the particular costs that they have and what might be appropriate for that project, and that's not necessarily the same as what the DNR has proposed. So the consistency isn't there, which as far as, you know, contract administration, that obviously increases workload because, you know, for each project we're trying to figure out what's appropriate, what should be in the work plan, what should we be looking for when they're requesting reimbursement. So that's where we're at now.
And Mr. Chair, Dave Shad, Deputy Commissioner at DNR. Glad to be back for you to talk about this issue.
I'm sure you're delighted.
To the question of whether this works for us or not, I think that the direct and necessary language works very well. I think that test of is this directly related to getting those dollars spent out on the ground, and is it necessary for getting those dollars spent on the ground, is a good test, and we've been able to use that term directly related to and necessary for to examine our costs project by project and determine which of our support costs, you can call them indirect costs or administrative costs or direct costs or whatever it might be, but which of these costs need that test, and it is a project by project determination. We've got a general procedure to identify how to allocate human resources costs or IT costs or whatever it might be. But then for each project, depending, for example, on whether or not we have to hire staff or provide computer support or whatever it might be, some of those costs may apply and may be directly related to a necessary for. And may not. I think one of the real big decisions that we made related to this calculation is we have excluded our leadership costs, and so my salary, the commissioner's salary, other costs associated with our leadership team, we do not include those. It's our belief that a lot of the work that we do related to the work of the council is kind of more general in nature, and it's kind of hard to make a case that that our work in the commissioner's office is directly related to a very specific project getting on the ground and is necessary for that project to be successful. I think you could make the argument that without that agency leadership and everything that provides as far as organizational support, that it could meet that test, but we have decided from our standpoint that we're not going to submit those costs. I think other organizations may believe that that's very important to get those costs covered. And I think that's an example of some of the decisions that Amanda's group needs to make as they work through proposals that come in from those other groups. And as she said, it's very complex. You kind of have to, in order to make decisions, she needs to understand how they allocate these costs, how they kind of run their business, and then kind of apply that direct and necessary language to what they are bringing forward. And so it is very time consuming and it needs to be done over and over again based on the nature of each project that comes forward. I don't think, and Matt can correct me, but I don't think she can do it once for each organization and then say, okay, that's the number we'll use for every project going forward. That might be the case, but I'm guessing it's probably not. So it's a pretty big workload for us to take on as contract managers.
Jane?
Thank you. Just curious about, have you seen any patterns at all into what types of projects or programs? Is there any kind of general pattern that you're seeing at all at this point in terms of what is being submitted as indirect? Some that maybe are typical for programs and not so for projects, for instance. And then another question is, as far as not including upper management or leadership at the DNR, at what level do you make that line drawn?
Right now it's just DU and TNC that right. We've been talking to about this at all, and so I guess since it's so new, we haven't really had time to see
right.
if there's a pattern
right.
necessarily, but the example that Dave gave is perfect as far as leadership costs. The DNR hasn't included those thus far. Other projects they submitted, TNC wanted to include that in their formula. So, you know, when we were talking with the advisory group that Heather mentioned, that's something we talked about is, you know, it'd be nice to have consistency, but you also have to recognize that each project is different, each organization is different. So where do you draw the line on consistency, but also looking at what is direct and necessary for that particular project, for that particular organization. So I think that's what we've been trying to keep in mind as we work through this with TNC.
Right. And NGOs and government are inherently different.
Yeah.
Okay, Dave, so I'm curious. I mean, we approved for you last year, I think it was 4 or 5 different percentages that would be used for different types of project, whether it was an acquisition or whatever. So I don't understand why that can work for you and each individual project isn't scrutinized for the percentage. But if you turn around and if we use that same process for Nature Conservancy or Ducks Unlimited, why does it work for the Department of Natural Resources and not for DU or anybody else?
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Jim, the reason that we have different percentages for some of our projects is we do look at the nature of each project. And so if a project is one big acquisition, there's no personnel being hired, no computer support required, there's very little in the way of financial management required to support the project. We look at that and apply some costs and not others, and in that case it would be a very low percentage. And other projects, for example, are roving habitat crews, pretty heavy to personnel. We need to equip all those folks. There's safety issues and all that sort of thing. And so there's a much higher support cost there. So So we've got kind of two levels of analysis. We've got a way, kind of a basic way to allocate HR costs. And so if you're hiring somebody, for example, we can allocate your share of our total HR costs based on a formula. Then we look at the nature of each project and say, should we assess HR costs of this project or not? If we do, we use that standard formula, that standard calculation, and apply those costs. If it's one FTE, it's that calculated cost per FTE. But if it doesn't, we don't apply those costs. And so each organization is going to have a different way to do that first calculation as far as how they allocate HR costs, leadership costs, equipment costs, rent costs, all that kind of thing. They're all going to have a kind of a different calculation there. I think it would be reasonable to ask each group to do that second step and just look at the nature of each project and say, is it reasonable to assess all of these costs for this project that we're intending to do?
I think the question is, if you're looking at the Nature Conservancy to use them as an example, and you're really looking line by line as to what's correct and necessary, but for the department you're looking at a percentage, isn't that a double standard, and why would that be fair?
TNC is proposing a percentage too, so it's really the same. It's the same process for both.
It's line by line. I mean we can tell you how much you're being charged for HR services, for example, but we can't have somebody or all the people in our HR section that might be involved in supporting that staff each time they have to process a payroll transaction or a timesheet or something, code their time for that one transaction. And so we've come up with some much easier ways and sensible ways, auditable ways, to allocate those costs across the entire agency. And the idea is that each program, each funding source, pays their fair share, no less or no more, but their fair share of these costs. And we use a percentage or an allocation process to identify those costs. And that's commonly accepted practice.
Tim?
Dave, we understand what you're doing. Okay, you keep going back to what you're doing. That's I don't think the problem we're trying to solve here. We're trying to find a process that we can use across the board. Okay, we understand what you're doing, but you have to see that this is a double standard. You're no different than the TNC when you come before us and ask for money. But then at the end of the day, you're also the entity that gets to decide what should their expenses are allowable or not allowable. That's basically what you're telling us here. How is that fair? And the other thing is, if we had a standard process, say we went to TNC and gave them the same deal that we gave you, quote unquote, when they come back next year, they don't have to, if we gave you 7% for an acquisition, they don't have to use the 7%. They could come back next year and say, okay, this is our project this year. We know we could go up to 7%, but we went through our project just like the Department of Natural Resources does, and we found out we're not going to have these kind of expenses, and this is the number we're putting in this year. And then the council can look at it and say, okay, you've done your homework just like the Department of Natural Resources. You're working within the same parameters as the Department of Natural Resources. And don't you think that's a lot more equitable than having the department who's actually competing against them for projects determine what or what isn't allowable as an expense?
Mr. Chairman, Jim, we're not opposed to these groups capturing these costs. We've been asked to provide a service. We've been asked to manage these contracts. We've been asked to do this evaluation. We believe we've proved that with integrity and fairness.
I'm not accusing you of not being. What I'm trying to tell you is we're trying to level the playing field. Okay? I'm not accusing you of anything. Well, I think you've done a great job.
And Jim, I think the work that the Mammoth Group has done is, I don't think there's an uneven playing field out there. And the work that her group has done with DU and TNC, I think the uneven playing field comes in with some of the smaller organizations that don't have the sophisticated financial management processes to bring forward, you know, the kind of proposals with the necessary documentation that some of the larger national organizations or international organizations can. And I'd be very interested in working with you to figure out how we can support some of these other organizations and their efforts to get some of these costs covered and make sure that playing field is there.
Bill? Tell me if I understand this correctly. Do all organizations, the Department of Natural Resources and the non-governmental organizations working through contract administration, have the same burden of proof with regard to showing that the costs are direct and necessary?
Yes, that's correct.
And is that burden of proof essential to the burden of proof is a defendable basis of allocation? So there is no double standard.
I don't see one.
So what was the purpose of you coming to us last year and asking us for these percentages per each project? If everything was just, you're just following standard procedure, why did you come to us and ask for that money?
I think you asked us to I think there's the reason there's two different processes is we couldn't ask Amanda's group within the department to review the department's allocation process and the department's direct and necessary. And so I think by necessity, we bring our numbers to you, and council relies on us to take care of everybody else's, the review of everybody else's allocation methodology. So that's, in my mind, that's the only reason why we bring this to you is because there's nobody else to bring it to. So.
But you asked for specific percentages for indirect administrative expenses from us.
Sure.
And so why did you do that? If what Bill has said is true, why did you bother? Why is there these two sets of books, or why is there these two sets of accounting? If what Bill says is true, why is there any difference?
If it was the council's wish that we just build those costs into our proposals, into our work plans, and you approve them, and with our assurance that they're in keeping with these principles and with the statutory and the constitutional language, that we'd be fine with that.
But the fact of the matter is they're really indirect expenses that you found justification for is really what they are.
They are costs that are directly related to a necessary for the contract.
Bill? I think what Councillor Cobb said was correct. They are indirect costs that have been rationally allocated on a basis that identifies the portion of the indirect cost that is due to, required for, the Outdoor Heritage Fund work. We asked you to come before the council because the council is a legislative body and one of the functions of the legislature is oversight of state agencies. We asked you to administer the indirect cost process with non-governmental organizations because it is an executive branch agency to implement responsibility to implement the appropriations to those people. So that's why there's an inquiry of the department and how they do it in the council, and why the department is looking at what NGOs are doing. It's trying to sort out the constitutional responsibility and the separation of powers as best we can. And it isn't easy. I think we've tried to follow the advice of the legislative auditor, MMB, other governmental organizations doing similar things. And we've landed in this place where the department has a methodology that identifies the type of project and calculates a percentage based on each division's nature of doing work and applies that to the work of the Outdoor Heritage Fund. We think the other organizations are doing the same thing. That's what we've asked. And it's all based in the same law, which you have before you. And that's a law that has been adopted by the legislature as a result of looking at the legislative auditor's work, trying percentages and finding fault with them, and saying this is the best way to go. I don't know what we can do more.
So I have two questions, maybe for you guys, but certainly for the other members here. And one is, we did get in our packet the LCCMR guidelines on allowable expenses. And they've taken an approach not completely unlike correct and necessary, but then they've added to that generally ineligible expenses and prohibited expenses, and just said flat out, we don't care how you justify it, these don't work. And I'm curious if there's any sense from the commission members and frankly from the DNR about how that works or whether that has value in making sure that we're really only paying for project expenses that feel right. Because in the end, what we want to do is make sure we're doing the right thing and we're allocating money that actually is going to where we're supposed to have it go. And some of these fall into the, boy, that'd be tough to read in the paper kind of expenses. So I'm curious as to the appetite and the sense of whether or not it's appropriate for us to consider a similar type approach or not. Phil?
I recall Jim Nobles speaking to this council and talking about things like rent and expressing a desire to have more clarity on what to review as the audits. To the extent that enumerating these sorts of things provides that clarity to him, I think it would help the process. And to the extent there may be some unevenness of playing field, certainly even. That being said, one person's rent is necessary and another person's rent is not so.
Which is why they probably broke it into two categories, generally ineligible and prohibited. Give yourself just a little wiggle room. But Jim?
I don't have that right on me right now.
It's in the packet.
Okay. It's in front of you. But I guess my question is, is there any limitation on their expenses? I mean, if somebody could come in and make a good argument that they needed $1 million worth of expenses on a $2 million project, I mean, is that allowable, or are there some limitations here as to?
Well, I think the accomplishment plan is going to govern everything. So if someone comes in with $1 million request, we're probably going to have a serious conversation about it.
Well, I exaggerated, but I mean, what's what's stopping somebody from doing Cadillac projects or doing Cadillac, following Cadillac procedures if they think they can get away with it? There's no limitation on it.
So that goes to the second thing I was going to ask the group, which is in our accomplishment plans and our proposals, would it make sense for a separate line that discloses the indirect expenses so that we could compare one to the other and it wasn't buried within another place in the amounts, and we could see who is actually asking for and who is not and what the amounts are, so that it's very clear to us. But it's not in the request for proposal. The indirect?
It's the line is direct support services, so it's a separate line item in each budget that you review. Okay.
But it's not broken out by indirect. It's direct. It's DSS only, which may include indirect, correct?
Well,
an allocation of the indirect may be included.
Correct. So ISS is not broken out. It's included under the DSS line. Right? Direct support services, indirect support services. Indirect is a subset of direct.
I believe if you read the instructions as you're filling out, as you're filling out the form.
That's wrong.
Budget.
That's wrong. ISS is not included in DSS.
Allocated indirect is.
I'm losing you there.
The direct support services line item in the budget is the opportunity for organizations and entities to capture those expenses that otherwise would be difficult to enumerate in other line items.
Right.
So depending upon the methodology of the calculation, that is the number that is derived.
So it could include indirect.
Well, every expense has to be direct to the appropriation, so there really is no...
Well, it's direct and necessary, but, you know, all of these... This is part of the discussion we're having, what's direct, what's indirect. And we're saying that everything that we're going to pay for has to be direct, whether it's indirect or direct. I mean, that's a little bit of, you know, bogus terminology.
I think part of the confusion is that we're talking about two things.
Yeah.
And what we're talking about is direct support services. So that's all of those expenses that otherwise would be difficult
right.
to enumerate, put into a particular line item. They're all direct to. The methodology might be sometimes termed an indirect.
Some people might consider it indirect. Some people might may not. An NGO might. And,
but indirect is the methodology to capture those expenses. They're not the expenses
so
themselves.
Just so.
Okay.
Right.
Just so I understand, Heather, that would mean that of all the proposals that we recommended for funding, the only two NGOs that would have anything in that category would have been TNC and DU, and everything else would have been blank.
There are three other appropriations that have been approved by the council that have a line item for direct support services. Those are American Bird Conservancy, Minnesota Deer Hunters, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. To my knowledge, Amanda, and correct me if I'm wrong, they have not come forward yet for reimbursement requests, nor to talk about the methodology.
That's correct. Most likely.
Rick?
So I think part of the challenge here to add some complexity is the who, what, and when. Because the DNR is acting as the executive branch to implement the law that's passed by the legislature. So we go back a bit in time here beyond the council to contract and grants management and audits that occurred overall in the legislative body, looking at the whole issue of contract and grant management. And that, we set up an office of grants management, I think. This is separately from what's been happening with LSOHC. So there's protocol and practices that were developed for agencies, the executive branch, to use in dealing with distributing money out. Is that correct? So, and I understand Jim's point is that the DNR is also a recipient as well, as I think that's where you're coming from, is you're a recipient and the decider. And
that's just the box that we're in, because they can be both the recipient and the decider. But the legislature and the Constitution give them the role of being the decider and what's direct and necessary. Now, what is our role, and when is our role for direct and necessary? One, we can ask for specificity when we're asking for the money to come in. We could make a decision on when we're making the recommendation, and that's a recommendation on the appropriation, and we could look at the accomplishment plan post hoc. Is that right? That's the three points of contact where we're at. And we have been following the same practices for 5 years, right? With adjustment after the legislative auditor to be more direct and necessary because statute directed us.
That's correct.
So we have the executive branch doing what they've been told, the best of their ability, and I've heard them say they're open to more input or whatever, but I think there's been a lot of input on this. We're looking at where do we come in and what do we need to say regarding this, and then looking at the overall transparency of does the public who wants the outcomes from these decisions to be direct and necessary on protecting and restoring and enhancing the goals that are outlined in the Constitution. So when I look at all that, I'm not sure what our role... So bringing back to when, we've already made a recommendation. So the point we would be really even talking about here is the RFP for the next time. And to justify a change in our practices, where is the problem? And I don't see an overwhelming problem unless we open it up and all these folks come forward and tell us there's a problem. You know, I'd like to see if there is one. Otherwise, the status quo seems to be working. And they're the ones on the hook. The DNR is on the hook because they're going to be the ones auditing. You're the responsible party for both your own money and the money that goes out to the NGOs. And that's where the public has the protection, because the executive branch does the distribution of money. And if they error, the judicial branch is always there. Am I wrong in any of this?
That's as I understand it.
Now I'm curious, could I follow up on the question I asked earlier where the line is drawn for leadership? For DNR, as to what's included or not?
What's excluded is our commissioner's office operations and our regional director's operations, that's the commissioner's office presence of it in our four regional offices. What we have been including in our calculation are the division level leadership costs of division director and
And then I'm curious about the way that LCCMR does it with the eligible, generally ineligible, and prohibited. Does that help you, or does that make it more complicated? Is that clear? Would it make sense for us to do something like this, or is it redundant?
It's helpful for us. I mean, the more clarity that we can have on what the council's wishes are, the better that we can do at making sure that those are the costs that we're reimbursing.
Are there any things on this list that you take issue with?
I don't have lists in front of me. So.
Do you, Paul?
See your list?
Yeah. You know, if it works for LCCMR, I don't know. Right.
Sorry, Sue.
It's okay. I know in the packet there's also another eligible and ineligible expense list that is being used as the CPL program by the DNR. So if we, it was in the packet. So if we did something, we'd want to probably start with theirs and then vary from that, since they're both coming from the same funding source.
Could I ask for Neil to come up and answer what my question was earlier? Do you mind? you know, just I just don't want to do stuff just for the
reason
just
we're
to do it.
Here today is to try to deal with this because it's a very complex issue.
It is very deep.
The deeper you get, the less clear it is.
I'm Neil Beacon. I'm the Prairie Recovery Program Coordinator for the Nature Conservancy. Thanks for the opportunity to be here today. I think Heather's description of the approach that the Nature Conservancy has taken, referencing the A122 audit earlier, was very accurate. I think we base our indirect, if you will, calculations, our direct support service calculations on our federally approved rate. And then we've worked with Amanda and her group to assure that that methodology is appropriate for the Outdoor Heritage Fund grants as well. And I very much appreciate the work that Amanda and her team have put into working with us to get this figured out, because it has been a substantial process. It's taken us several months of conversations back and forth just to make sure that everybody understands exactly what we've proposed and exactly what our calculations are including and not including. They've been very cooperative. I think the standards that they're working under and we're working under are actually very similar. The stuff that Dave talked about, the type of costs that are included in their calculations are exactly the same as ours. Our terminology might be a little bit different, but the methodology that we use is really very similar. So thanks for the opportunity, and if there's questions, I'd be happy to answer
directly. We have two sets of lists of eligible costs and ineligible costs and prohibitive costs. We've dovetailed those. But what do these do?
Pretty closely together.
I see that there's a lot of, you know, I have a task group with my two phone, but there's obviously some overlap.
So you didn't either.
And what would this do to you?
I'm going back over.
So, not having studied this myself, I would say, in general, because we're a large organization, we're an international organization, our accounting standards are set by our Arlington office. So we're bound by the categories that are assigned to those and are audited at an international and national level annually. So there are certain costs that are excluded in there that may or may not be on those lists. Again, not having seen it, I can't say any of that, but we don't have the ability here in Minnesota to segregate out something that might be called out on the list because our accounting standards are different and audited at a higher level.
So that's probably true for a lot of the larger, you know, NGOs and SMEs. This really might apply more to some of the smaller ones, you know, like
My concern was the TNC method.
Anything other is
that the university method is a 50% overhead rate. What they would determine is direct and necessary. Where do we draw the line in terms of what is acceptable? You know, and
if you see Leon, we get his signature on it.
You know, I don't doubt that what you're saying is right, but if you start to get in there, how big is
over in your corner?
But isn't that
one of
the problems?
Yeah, but I'm guessing that what Amanda's group is trying to do is look at a system that PNC has come up with that has stuff in it, you know, just our lobbying expenses and TNC's overhead rate.
Yeah.
Our fundraising expenses in the overhead rate.
Well, we can't get it back as a council.
Overhead rate. But do we want to be paying?
Yeah.
Is that direct and necessary? And that becomes the question. Yeah?
I'd like to ask Representative Hansen, if we showed you the project proposals from last year, could you tell us what the indirect expenses were for TNC and Ducks Unlimited?
No.
Does it make any difference to you?
It does make a difference in terms of, I have confidence that the contract administration is going to be making sure, because we've put it.
That's law. After the fact.
Well, that's reimbursable. We've made law that it's reimbursable. It has to be a reimbursable. So that's where, as a legislature, we give the guidance that it is going to be direct and necessary. And we have the executive branch that's supposed to implement the law. And if they don't...
So if the project comes in and it's loaded with indirect expenses, that makes no difference to you as a council member when you're looking at the project?
That is not what I said.
I know, but that's the question I'm asking you now.
I look at the outcomes for the project. And I, again, have confidence that we're going to be having direct and necessary costs applied to those.
I understand that, but I'm asking you, as a council member, when a project comes before you, the amount of money that's in that project for indirect expenses, does that make a difference to you when deciding on if you're going to fund that project or not fund that project?
The thing that made the primary difference for my first cut was whether there was matching funds.
This is a pretty... I'm just asking a direct question.
And I'm answering
your
question.
I'm sorry. Look.
Mr. Chair, this is a peculiar question that Jim's asking. We ask people who are responding to our call for requests to provide an estimate of what is direct and necessary for their project, including these refill expenses. I don't understand the concept of loaded with indirect, especially given the fact that they will be required to document in some nature or another the direct and necessary quality of each request for reimbursement. And then we're going to audit it, and they're going to have to prove it again. I don't know where the indirect is. And if we've got people stuffing their requests with indirect expenses, that's wrong. They shouldn't be doing that. And they shouldn't be able to justify a reimbursement, and the money should return to the fund. And that's the system that's established.
And I guess my question earlier was about full disclosure of the difference between what is seen as indirect and seen as direct. Because that, if we can figure out, and I recognize it's difficult, but as just one council member, if that is part of what is available to us as we are looking at requests and accomplishment plans, it influences my decision, just like matching funds do. You know, when someone comes to the table with 40% matching funds, it means a hell of a lot more to me than someone who says, pay the whole way.
And if someone... depends on what the matching funds are.
I will say generically, if someone comes to the table saying, I'm going to find some of this money somewhere else and not ask you to put the whole bill personally, that is a stronger proposal than someone who says, give me all the dough. That's a personal decision for me. But somebody who comes to the table and says, I don't want any of this indirect, I'll cover it with my other ways of doing it, is going to get more interest from me than someone who says, pay it all. It's another form of matching, I guess, is what it boils down to. And so I'm most concerned with that we have a disclosure so that we can understand this as people are asking for it. And if TNC wants to ask for 25%, it's going to affect how I, as a council member, and I suspect others, view their overall proposal. And we have a discussion about that.
One other question. So if I can ask staff. So staff and the legislature are satisfied with the process that we're using now, that they believe that we're using the best possible process, and they have no issues whatsoever with the process that we're currently using?
I think given the whole of the process, the auditor's involvement, the legislature's review of the auditor's reports, and the fact that this is common in government to require the executive branch to ensure that the goods are delivered before they pay, we got a good system.
I think we've set up a reimbursement-based system which allows for that, and if you're going to have somebody padding a receipt, then that's fraud. And the auditor is going to catch that and has the authority to deal with that. The one thing I would, in looking at the LCCMR guidance, if you had something like this, I think you would be providing a clear, brighter line on prohibited expenses, which would make both the auditing and the executive branch's task and the NGO's task easier. So I think there is an argument for consistency with that. My question would be to LCCMR is this, at what point does this come in the RFP or in the accomplishment
this
plan?
This is in their RFP.
In the RFP.
Yes.
So
this was lifted from their RFP.
So I think there's a value in that because it's, I mean, these are bright and clear lines here on that, and I would be supportive of doing something like that.
You know, Conservation Partners has the same bright line.
Yeah.
You
right.
When you apply, it's there. It's kind of interesting to me that our grant program, our small grant program, has it, and our large grant program
exactly.
does.
Exactly.
So I think those are, I mean, and I don't know what, again, the where step, if the executive committee made this recommendation to adopt the LCCMR thing here, then we adopt it and it goes to the next full meeting. I mean, if that's the process,
that's
and that would be for the
for the next. Mark. We're talking about for the upcoming call
for the upcoming.
Year, not for what we've already done.
I'd be supportive of that,
and I'd be supportive of it if once we get staff input from it and from applicants' input on doing that, and then having a collaborative process to line them up and knock them down or include them.
Yeah, I mean, one of them on the Conservation Partners list is capital equipment. We clearly, on some things, are going to want to fund capital equipment, so
yeah.
We probably don't want to have that. And,
right.
You know, if you're doing
a
$50,000 project, it makes sense to not have capital equipment.
And we have a line item for that.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not. Passports.
Oh.
Maybe not.
The back taxes.
Depends on where they are.
Bad debts and back taxes right. and fundraising.
Legal.
Mr. Chair?
Yep.
If you want to go down this line, I've consulted with Heather, and we think you ought to make a motion to recommend to the full council to include the LCCMR accepted and ineligible, clearly ineligible, as a basis for discussion on the upcoming call for the full cast.
I'm not ready to do that because I'd rather get in. Well, we can move that and then have a discussion on it, right? From staff and from. Is there anyone from DU here? Or any other NGOs here that apply?
My assumption is the discussion will be on this.
Okay. Okay. That's a good
one. Setting the table for that meeting.
I just don't know why we wouldn't look at our own CPL program,
I'm
not comfortable
in
recommending either one of them yet.
The value of outlining prohibited is of more value than talking about what's eligible.
I agree.
And I think if we can focus on the what we don't want to do
right.
versus the what's okay, then we won't wake up and say, why didn't we say this was okay?
Okay. So if I just look at the prohibited expenses on the LCCMR page 13, I don't see any problems in prohibiting those in our exercises. Does staff?
No.
Does Neil, as long as you're still up there, Neil?
I should have taken the opportunity to grab the list.
Work expenses before the work is done. fundraising taxes except sales taxes on goods and services, lobbyists for political contributions, advertising and marketing expenses, loans, grants, or subsidies to persons or entities for development, bad debt, late payment fees, finance charges, contingency, interest or investment management fees, directors or officers' salaries, merit awards and bonuses, memberships, including subscriptions and dues, publications, periodicals, and subscription fees, employee worksite parking, and entertainment, decorations, gifts, and prizes. Because I know not everyone in the audience has a copy of this as well.
To answer your question, Gene, none of those jump out at me as problematic. Most of those would be prohibited under our A133 requirements already.
So. And TNC applies for LCCMR dollars, right?
Yes.
So you're used to working with this structure?
Yes.
Okay.
Jim? And you know, how about like appraisals? Do you sometimes have appraisals before you bring up, you know, a project is authorized? Would that be an expense you'd be wanting to recoup?
We don't allow that now.
I understand that. I'm just asking a question.
Well, I guess I would consider appraisals for a property that we're interested in purchasing part of the approved accomplishment plan, work plan, so that wouldn't be an expense outside of the scope of the project.
Pardon me? You wouldn't be allowed to recoup that expense?
Well, if we were conducting appraisals within, say we're actively pursuing projects under Prairie Recovery Project Phase 3 right now, so we will be commissioning appraisals before we know if we're going to buy that property or not as part of the process. But that's part of the approved work plan for Prairie Recovery Phase 3. So What it's
not is you're not getting an appraisal before you get the allocation of money.
Correct.
But you are getting an appraisal, some of which lead to projects that aren't done.
Correct.
Because that's part of the work.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this is part of being a program, an ongoing effort to protect land.
So a quick read, Jane, could you like this? There are three things on the conservation partners that's not included in the LCCMR that seem to fit in that category. One is education expense activities.
Yep.
And I'll jump to Q, which is office rental fees, including storage space rental, and then O, which is indirect expenses such as office maintenance, office utility expenses, refreshments for staff, decorations, office material and supplies. That, to me, seem to be kind of in the same light. But maybe not others.
Is that a friendly amendment?
We don't have a motion yet at this point, so there can be no preparation. Sue?
Actually, the office rental fees is on the LCCMR list. If you take the two ineligible and prohibited list of LCCMR and compare that to the ineligible list of the CPL, they're nearly identical, including the exceptions. So like the attorney fees except to acquire and clear title to land, which is E on the generally ineligible, is J on the ineligible and written the same way. So they are nearly identical with the two lists.
So we have to be out of here in about 10 minutes because someone else has the room.
I would like to make a motion that we list the prohibited expenses as they are listed on page 13 of the LCCMR guidance at this point, to be included in our next RFP or call.
Would you
and bring that up at our next meeting?
Would you take the motion that was passed out to you as a suggested council position and add that to that?
Okay, where is that? Let me see here.
Which is?
Yep.
It is the council's intent that all expenses demonstrated by the recipient to be direct and necessary for successful completion of the purpose of recommended appropriation, including effort in support of the requested organization's OFH work, be reimbursed and then except these prohibited expenses would not be eligible or something.
Right. Yeah, that's good.
And you would just take the LCCMR prohibited at this point,
at this
and then
point.
If we want to amend it at the meeting on the 16th, we
exactly.
could so do. Okay, we have a motion. Sue?
I'm a little concerned about doing the motion on just the prohibited because generally ineligible expenses are pretty big items too. And they have the exclusions for when it would make sense, like insurance except title insurance. I don't think you'd want to just do the prohibited now or later because if by just listing the prohibited, you're implying that everything else is okay. And there's a big list of stuff that's not okay.
So, because we're running out of time, what I'd love to do is get us to recommend something for discussion on the 16th and ask you to specifically come back with what you would add to that, as well as anyone else, so that we have a more rich discussion on the 16th with those. Because I don't disagree with you, but I think if we try to wordsmith today, we aren't going to get it done.
That's my concern, too. Yeah.
But we set a direction for us, and we bring something specifically to the council. And when it comes, I think it would come with a note from staff specifically saying this is not meant to be the end list. There may be some adjustments to it. Jim?
So David, the motion is to bring this idea to the council.
Yep.
On the 16th.
On the 16th. Okay. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. That's our agenda for today, guys. Thank you. Appreciate very much the time, because this is really important stuff. Yes, and we are adjourned.